Welcome to episode 6 from Digital Outbox. Hi, I'm Shaquille, and joining me today is Ian Dick. Hello, Ian.
Hello.
How are you?
Not too bad. Bit of a bad day at work. Bit of a bad mood tonight.
Well, I don't want to know about that. So, anything exciting happening?
Absolutely nothing at all.
Something must have happened during the week. It's been. Am I correct in saying that we are a bit late with this podcast?
Yeah, but I've just been busy with work. It's been horrid. And so, yeah, just try to get through a lot. And then I'm away in a training course this week as well. So, lots to do.
Well, you need all the training you can get, my friend.
Thanks for that. Well, it is in some shady Microsoft stuff. So,
Visual Basic by any chance?
And SharePoint.
Good old SharePoint.
So anyway, good old my ass.
Let's crack on with the news. So this week's news, I guess the biggest one is Google Chrome OS.
Ta-da!
Not too much information, just the fact that it's been announced and a couple of web posts, I think, with a fact.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't really say much at all. Basically, it was a few paragraphs. We're going to release an OS. It's been rumoured for, I don't know, years that they were going to do an OS. And that was about it. But every blog, every tech blog were just chased after the story.
I guess, you know, maybe they just want to stick their foot in because Windows 7 is going to be released pretty soon, and it's just like another sort of, hey, we are here too, don't forget about us.
Yeah, but, I think so.
But I think...
I mean, there was that... No, crack on when you go.
I was just going to say that, you know, I think it's a good idea for, obviously... There are more and more sort of netbooks coming along which do need a more lightweight operating system, and I guess this could be something, you know, from an established company, it could be quite good.
I think so. I mean, but then at the same time, if I look at what we're doing, you know, as users, I wouldn't use it.
No.
You know, for like day to day, you know, I've got video content, music content, you know, files, you know, we're recording this podcast, where would we record it?
Yeah, but we are power users. I guess, you know, just people who just want something to carry on.
I can never figure out this power user stuff. It's a bit like that thing with hardcore gamers. We are hardcore. And it's just, what does that mean? I just don't know. But
I'm sure it keeps somebody in a job coming up with these names.
But, well, I think if you're using a lot of media or you're creating a lot of media, then I don't think these are for you.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a secondary device. You know, so you've got one main machine and then you've got a netbook.
Yeah.
Or the other thing I was thinking about, you know, if you could easily boot into it. You know, so if you were just wanting to quickly, you know, a 2-3 second boot into an operating system, access some files, you know, on the Google site, be a bit of Google Reader, browsing, watch some Flash movies.
Yep.
You know, that sounds fine. But
so basically it's for like the average person in the street who, you know, doesn't do stuff that we do. They just want something to maybe surf the net with quickly, check their emails, and that's pretty much it.
But average person on the street has iPods. So where's all that music library sit?
Well, I mean, like I said, we don't know everything about this, but...
No. Hopefully. Well, there's, I guess, some little tidbits came out. Like, I mean, they've called it, you know, Google Chrome OS, which to me tells me it's going to be all based browser-based.
Mm.
But then they also said that other people can write applications for it, so it's going to support other apps. They've also, I think it was the day after, they sort of released some hardware partners. So there was Acer and Adobe and Asus. Hewlett-Packard was mentioned. So there seems to be... I mean, it's not just a, you know, I don't know. It's not just a nothing announcement, but
no.
I still get the impression it was released early. It's almost like somebody's forced their hand.
Mm.
And there's another one of the tech bloggers. He reckoned it was all about an announcement today from Microsoft. Now I know we're recording this on Monday, and it looks like Office 2010 is the big news from Microsoft today, and alongside improvements to the Office applications, they're also announcing Office on the web.
Ooh,
so Excel, Word, PowerPoint. And certainly from the, I mean, I've only I mean, I've spent 3-4 minutes looking at some demos tonight.
Yeah.
And all of them certainly pointed to a far richer client on the web than Google.
Okay.
And Zoho as well. I mean, it looked to be better than Zoho. And Zoho's always been a bit, you know, functionality-wise, slightly better than Google Apps.
I mean, we obviously use Google Docs to produce our show notes and just to keep on top of our podcasts.
And it works really well.
It works really well. And I'm assuming Office will be at least as good as that. If not, maybe the Microsoft will try to add their own features.
I mean, on the videos today, it looked better, and the formatting looked far superior as well. And they said one of the key things for Word, for example, was that the formatting should look the same as if you formatted it on normal desktop Word.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the other key thing was that they were free, but I don't think they could have done anything else.
Yeah.
I don't think they could have turned around and said, you know, for a low subscription, because people would have just said, well, I can use Zoho or Google.
Yeah. Do you think? You know, like obviously people have been used to using Office on a desktop and not on the cloud. Do you think it will move people away from the desktop version more? I mean, certainly people like us would be happy to try it out, but you know, some of the people are like, you know, sticks in the mud. Do you think they'll be happy to move or...
I think as long as the speed's there. Mm. I mean, the thing that's always, and it's kind of wound me up more so at work than at home, but... You know, people will get really hit up about, you know, we must be in the latest version of Word or Excel.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't use it. You're not using the potential in there. The amount of people I see that just are scraping the surface.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think it's even more than the 80-20 rule. You know, I think there's 90% of people I know that use Word and Excel, you know, aren't really using it properly.
I mean, I've certainly used Word and other applications at work, and I try to use as many features as I can, you know, to produce like a really nice, rich document for my manager or whatever. But even then, you know, I use more features than anybody else does at work because I just like to tart up my documents. But I think even then, I'm only probably using about 10% of the features that are available. It's like...
Absolutely.
So you think, well, why do you need to have the latest version when, you know, like an older version?
It'll be interesting. I think it'll be interesting to compare, you know, looking at a desktop client and looking at this Microsoft Office Web,
mm-hmm.
you know, is there enough in there that somebody could just use that? You know, so I'm thinking of, I guess, at work, that if I've got SharePoint running, handing out documents via that, could I just use the cloud version
mm-hmm.
of Office? Do I really need to have that installed on a machine?
True.
I think for the majority of our users, the majority of people I know, it would be fine.
Okay. So in terms of going back to Google Chrome, then do you think they have any competition?
Well, I mean, Windows 7 seems to be, I mean, it looks like a really strong product for netbooks. I don't think Linux is a particularly strong competitor. Linux has been out so long, and I still don't think they've cracked it for average users.
It's open source muck, isn't it?
Well, some bits of it are really good, but I still think... You know, when it comes to, you know, if you have to even scratch under the surface, you're just into some, you know, real horrible mess that average Joe's not going to get.
I mean, personally, I've never touched Linux, so I can't really say too much about it.
Every year and a half, 2 years, I would visit it again, and every time I've just, you know, played with it for a couple of days and thought, nope, still not ready. But there's other things. There's an app, or sorry, there's an operating system that's been touted for the last few months called Jolly Cloud. That's JOLICloud.com,
mm-hmm.
and I'm assuming, because nobody's seen Google Chrome, but I think this is probably, I guess, a close equivalent, where it's all about, you know, apps in the cloud,
mm-hmm.
and it's allowing you to quickly boot up into an operating system and then just access these applications.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting.
Yep.
I think their hand's been forced, but because they've announced nothing, you know, they've made an announcement and that's it. And they're talking about by year end it'll be downloadable.
Yeah, I mean, again, assuming they've been working on it for a while, so maybe you know, they're either being rushed or maybe the product is ready. But I'm assuming there'll be lots of bugs when it comes out.
Mm.
So anyway, sticking with Google and moving on, Google Apps is out of beta now, finally.
And Google Mail and Google Calendar.
But it's nothing other than a label change. That's pretty much it, isn't it?
And when that happened, because it was all on the same day, but that actually happened first. And my first thought was just, this is them starting to push into enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if I was a company, would I buy a beta product? Doubt it. But if I could go and buy, you know, Gmail and Google Apps, then yeah, I'd be. I think it's a small business.
Hmm.
I mean, we for our podcast we set up Google Apps for the domain.
It's been and you're really
getting
useful.
You know, Google Mail, you're getting Google Apps, you've got the chat. It's fantastic, you know, for us to have that for free is really, really nice.
Okay.
So yeah, it'll be interesting. I guess we won't know probably 6 months from now. We'll know exactly what it's looking like.
Yeah. O2, free replies and direct messages to your mobile. You mentioned this to me, so I don't know much about it.
Yeah, well, it's only just come out today. Mm-hmm. So if you roll back a year, Twitter used to have free access on mobile phones, so you could use a mobile phone to tweet and get messages back. But it was costing too much, so it all got scrapped. I think Vodafone had a deal about a month, 6 weeks ago, that was doing that for free. And O2's come out today and done much the same. So from the 1st of August, you can log into your Twitter account and you can set up your mobile device. And so anybody that sends you a reply or a direct message, you'll get a text with that. And there seems to be, not on their main site, but on their kind of fair usage, there seems to be saying that you need to keep under 600 a month. So I'm guessing that's just to kind of keep a bit of control on it. Yeah. If you want to post to Twitter, you can text to post, but that costs as part of your normal bundle. But I thought it was quite interesting because everybody's rushing at the moment an iPhone to try and realize there's a lot of people clamoring for a push notification Twitter client, you know, so rather than me having to check all the time, if you DM me, then I would get a push notification. And I guess this is another way of doing it.
I don't know how I feel about that being told tweet, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
if you sort of follow a lot of people, you know, you'd be bombarded every couple of seconds.
Exactly.
Especially if you follow Jonathan Ross or Jason Bradbury or, you know, Stephen Fry. It's like,
it's just too much.
God. Yeah.
And it's interesting because there's been quite a few people that I've followed on Twitter and I've ended up just had to unfollow them because I don't like them or
it's just too much.
And it's just too much noise. I guess that's a nice thing, you know, you can unfollow.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't send them a message and say, you do too much, please stop, you know, it's just unfollow.
I think maybe about, you know, like you said, about a year back it might have been useful to have this feature, but now people with like iPhones, Palm Pres and Androids and stuff like that, you don't really need push, you know,
yeah.
You've got a really nice Twitter client and I think a lot of people will be just happy with that.
It's not just that, it gets in the way.
Mm.
You know, it's like if you're just trying to, you know, work, I mean, you could spend your whole day just staring at a Twitter client, you know, and just constantly replying to people and it's like, stop, time and place.
I just mentioned Palm Pres there. I don't know if you saw this earlier in the week. I read a little article saying that after a recent survey, a lot of the Palm Pres users are shouting out for a soft keyboard when they're used to, you know, when it was first announced, they were like slagging off the iPhone for not having a hard keyboard.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And they're like, we want a soft keyboard.
Well, I'm kind of used to that now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've been saying for years that I didn't want like a keypad even. I just wanted to use the screen.
Well, the reason they want a soft keyboard is, and this is what makes me laugh, they can't be bothered to slide out the hardware keyboard when they just want to send a quick message. And of course you don't. But they use that against the iPhone when it first came out. Like, look, we've got a hard keyboard.
Yeah, I mean, that's rubbish. That's right. I mean, they should have it, and no doubt. I don't know if it would come as an update or whether it would be like a next version.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how adaptable that operating system is.
Well, they're saying the Android never had a soft keyboard, but that was added in as a software update, so it should be possible.
And you would think they would be able to.
Yeah. Stick with mobile phones. Another thing that caught my eye, I came across this. It was a mock-up screenshot, and it was a picture of an iPhone with a little miniature joystick attached to it. And I thought, I don't know if there's something out already. There might be. But I thought, wouldn't it be really cool if somebody came out with, like, say, a SNES joypad that connects to the bottom of the iPhone, and you could, you know, some of these games that you've got on, you can use a joypad to play it on, or even, like, a little miniature joystick. That'd be a really good idea. You just sitting there with a big grin on your face.
I'm sure there was something last year, but it was a horrible thing that you slid your iPhone into, and then you had this. It turned it into a big
controller
type thing. But I know what you're talking about. You're talking about either via Bluetooth or plug into the board.
Yeah, even if it's a wire, and you know, you get maybe get a little stand, but a nice proper joypad, not some big clunky monster. But,
oh no, I mean, I'm sure if you had a SNES pad, you'd be.
Oh, SNES pad. It's funny though, because this lunchtime I thought I'd play around with emulators, and I downloaded a SNES emulator, and I was playing R-Type, and I thought all I really need is a joypad.
You little Snyder! I told you about me downloading that meme. That meme torrent with all those ROMs. You're like, you'll never use that.
Oh, meme. Sticking with games, you've got some woes that you want to discuss with us.
Well, there's a couple of things that were quite interesting last week. So Battlefield 1943, I think I mentioned it in last week's podcast. Nice yawn. And it came out on Wednesday. And, oh, so frustrating. I think more so on the Xbox than it's been in the PS3. So Wednesday night, there was not enough servers. So basically, you couldn't get into a game. Tried again on Thursday, much the same. If you tried it mid-afternoon, then you could get in. But basically, I don't know if it was either EA underestimated just the demand of it, but they talked about it. And fair play to EA in some ways. They actually had a Twitter account, and they were keeping people updated of their issues. So they weren't hiding away. EA's have been notorious in the past for, you know, you go to the EA forums and you would complain about Tiger Woods or FIFA and they were deleting people's posts, you know, which I just think, what's the point of forums if you're going to, you know, moderate them like Stalin? You know, it's the whole point is to communicate. So at least it's pretty good. They've got a Twitter account and they've been open and honest and said, yeah, we've got problems, we're doubling our servers. Yes, we've got login issues, we're looking at that as well. So they kept you up to date. But it was basically, I mean, it was Friday until I could actually have a game. It does play really well. And because it's server support, you're actually having bigger games, so it's 24 people online, which is a bit more unusual for the 360 over the PS3, because 360 has always been about peer-to-peer gaming online, whereas PS3's had much better server support. But there's still issues with setting up squads and getting friends in, so I've been fairly unhappy, especially as looking so much forward to it. Mm-hmm. And when you get in a good game, it plays so well. Just really, really nice. Brings back good memories. But hopefully by now, I mean, there's still people. I mean, we tried it again on Saturday, still got issues. But hopefully by, you know, tonight, tomorrow, that should be the issues out of the way. One other game that was very, well, I guess it was more interesting. It's the first time I'd seen anybody trying this, was 1 vs 100. I don't know if you've seen what the concept behind this was.
No.
So on Xbox, they're going to run 1 vs 100, and they're going to have actual prizes for taking part. So during this beta period, the next 2 weeks of beta period in the UK, so there's no prizes, but after that they're going to be giving away gamer points and some arcade games. Also, there's going to be one-off special competitions where they're giving away laptops, some higher value prizes. I think the top prize is a car. And this is going to happen every so often. The whole point of this is and it was quite impressive technically how it worked. There was 70,000 gamers on at the same time playing this quiz. I mean, it's a quiz show. And they would randomly select 99 people to take part in the mob. So, sorry, 100 people to take part in the mob.
Right.
And they would also randomly select one person to be the one. And it was basically you answered general knowledge questions. It's actually pretty entertaining. It was 3 of us on for a couple of hours, and I wouldn't go on all the time.
No.
But I mean, it was 2 hours, and it was pretty enjoyable and quite a laugh.
Yeah.
They have some adverts running through it, but not it didn't get in the way too much.
Mm-hmm.
It was something a bit different. So that's coming out properly in a couple of weeks. I think I couldn't find it before. I wanted to find out before I actually started the podcast. I think it's pay to play, but
right.
So I think if you end up in the mob, you end up having to pay some gamer points, you know, so you're almost gambling some gamer points, I think. So I need to go away and confirm that.
Okay.
But yeah, couple of nice games.
Okay, well, I guess before we move on to our main topic, we just cover some Apple news before we move
yes.
on. So, go on, what have you got for us today then?
Oh, it's me. Thanks very much. Well, first of all, touchscreen netbook rumour again. which I think, since we've had Apples, have always talked about some sort of touchscreen netbook.
Mm.
Slightly more concrete, or certainly inferred today, that this is October, $800, 10-inch touchscreen, and it's in manufacture. I guess... sounds like a lot of money.
Sounds like a lot of money, but... didn't they, like, question Steve Jobs, the stand-in guy? I can never remember his name. And they were saying that Apple don't feel the market is ready for this sort of device.
Yeah, but they said that before they launched the iPod as well. They said it, you know, video iPod. People are asking them, why don't you do a video iPod? They don't believe there's a market for it. And 9 months later, they launched a video iPod.
Now there's a market for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's, you know, I don't know. But have you seen the Crunch Pad?
Crunch Pad, no.
Yeah, so you know there's a blog called TechCrunch.
Yep.
So the main guy behind that started a, it was almost like a, almost stemmed from a blog post of, all I want is a, you know, a 10-inch screen to get email, check Google Reader, do some bits and pieces, some light blogging, and watch some YouTube. And I just want a touchscreen to do that and nothing else. So it kind of kicked off a bit of discussion. And then over the months, he's put a team together. And they're bringing out the Crunch Pad, and they're going to try and keep it for under $300, and it's a touchscreen device. Looks very similar to all the stuff that they've talked about with Apple.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I'd touch it.
So it'd be interesting, you know. What was that?
I don't think I'd touch it. You know, anything like, you know, a couple of guys sort of made up.
Oh no, but it's more than that now.
Yeah.
If you go and look up Crunchpad just now and you look at the latest designs, I think you'd be fairly impressed.
Well, that was it, a Gizmondo device. That looked quite impressive before it came on. Look what happened to that.
Yeah. The 3DO looked quite impressive.
Oh, Wayne Humphreys bought that. He's still got it, I think. He's been trying to sell it to me for years.
No way. So couple other rumours. They're talking about cameras on iPods now. So this would be...
I think that's more or less a confirmation, though. Anyway, you're going to expect that now, aren't you? With the
you'd think so.
Yeah.
I mean, especially with the touches, you know, you'd think it's an actual thing to do. So many apps, you know, for camera.
Yeah.
You just think it would be an actual thing to do, that I've got a touch and I can take a video and.
That would be interesting, actually, if it's going to have video and the iPhone 3G doesn't. You know, it's like. Mm.
Well, buy a 3GS.
I can't afford the tax.
Another little rumour that came out today was that Apple's now in talks with T-Mobile and Orange in the UK, which might explain O2 making a buying into the Panpree.
Yeah.
Because I still think that's a bit of an odd one to try and tie up both the big, you know, smartphones like that.
Mm.
And other news is App Store has won. So it's Saturday or Sunday that was at 1 year old.
Did you buy like a wee cake to celebrate that then?
I bought a big cake.
Did you?
Yeah, no, I didn't.
Yeah, actually, you might be right.
Hey, stop looking at my breasts. I did buy some apps, but as I usually do.
Sorry, what was that? I didn't catch that.
I did buy some apps.
Did you? It's been a while since we discussed, I think, iPhone apps.
I'll do a couple of... I don't know if you've bought any recently as well, so I'll do a couple. One's called Prowl. So if you use a Mac, you've got Growl, which is a system notification bit of software. And what Prowl does is it takes those system notifications and it will turn it into a push notification to your iPhone. And that's about it. You know, it sounds really simple when you describe it like that, but there's so much you can get out of Growl.
I guess, and if you're at work and you usually leave your Mac on to do like a bunch of things, it's nice to be updated. But do you do that?
Sometimes, but I'm going to be. I'm guessing over the next sort of 2 to 3 months, I think I'm going to be moving more to that, and that'll be part of our discussions.
Okay.
I guess that's coming up, but I think.
Will that be your, like, your porn download so you know when they're complete?
You are obsessed, boy. Every week, I've got a counter. You are the only guy out of the two of us that constantly mentions it.
I believe it's you who usually mentions it.
No, it's you that mentions it, and then usually you have a little song afterwards as well to have a little celebratory song.
Okay.
Anyway, So Prowl is quite easy to set up, and it's what?
How much is it
so far? Oh, $169. It's one of these ones. It's not free, but it's not like a fiver. And you download a plugin for Growl on the Mac, and you sign up for an account on the website. And it's got some nice control options in it, because what I was worried about before I looked into it properly was, I don't want a message on the Mac and on the iPhone. But you can, there's a setting to say that when the Mac goes idle, only start messaging then. So there's some nice controls in there.
I might have a look at it, but I can't see myself using it personally.
Yeah.
One other thing I see on this, TwitVid, you've mentioned.
TwitVid, yes. So this is a free app, and it's very simple. Take a video, and then you fire up TwitVid, put in your Twitter account, do your little tweet as normal, attach the video, and it uploads it to their server. So it's just an easy way of getting video online, and it stops me from having to use Twitter later. I mean, I've paid for it, but it's just
such
lovely.
You're such a hater.
Oh, I do hate. I've got a thing about Twitter later. I think it was because it was one of these things.
I think it's stubbornness, that's what it is.
No, it's just too much. And it does loads, but it's just like, too much.
Okay. And finally, Boxcar.
Boxcar is another one for... So I mentioned earlier on that people are really... There seems to be this desire, and I guess it ties up with the O2 announcement today, but this desire to like constantly getting any mentions or direct messages, you know, tweeted or push notified to you.
I see this as a bit of a fad at the moment, and I can see that fading away soon.
Yeah, well, I hope so. I mean, so there's an app called Boxcar for $119. I've not bought this. It was just tied in with a couple of the stories all round about push notifications. But again, you buy this and you can set it up to push mentions and direct messages to you. My only worry is that now that I've got a few apps that are using push notifications, I don't think it scales. So you get the same message on your screen. So I've got Remember the Milk pushing out notifications to me. I've now got Prowl. There's a couple other apps I've got as well, which aren't doing anything.
I'd
very
imagine,
much,
you know, like over the coming months, maybe all these apps that you do use will probably add their own push notifications anyway. So yeah, you won't really need a, you know, like.
But the other thing is, it's like if you can imagine, you've got your iPhone just now, and if you've got an app, or if you've got four or five apps that are sending out push notifications, you're constantly getting the same notification, and it just overwrites.
Yeah.
So you fire it up, and you think, well, what push notification have I just received? And it's that same ugly dialogue box in the middle. I don't know why they couldn't have done it like text messages, or done it another way to actually stack the different messages so that you can see it and scroll through it. And
maybe
that'll come. But you know, you're just getting a single message in the centre of the screen.
So if you've got like loads of messages, you press close or whatever on one, and then the next one pops up. Is that how it works?
Yeah, but at the moment, all you see is one message. So if you actually send two or three through, you've lost those other two, and you need to go into badge notifications to see which apps just sent me that, because I don't know. All I know is it vibrated and it went bring. So it needs something. It's almost like in the same way you get visual voicemail. Yep. If you had some way of actually going in and seeing your push notifications, and you could see a list of here's all the ones that have come through, and click on it to launch the app or something like that. And I think, and I'm hoping it's one of the things that will come in a software update, and not next year's hardware.
I mean, like I said, I think it's a nice idea having push notifications, but I can see people maybe getting fed up off it after a while. I mean, it's maybe for important stuff. It's nice to have, you know, notifications. I mean, I'm getting to that point in my life, I think, where I like sometimes I just feel like it's too much. I mean, I think this week that's just gone. During the week, I actually unplugged myself completely for one day. I just thought I don't want to be connected.
Over the weekend, I had loads of work to do, like proper work, not like arsing around work. And although I had the Mac on, I had iTunes playing, turn Twitter off, turn Adium off. I just want to concentrate, you know, and it's just the constant interruptions just really gets in the way.
Okay, one little thing I'll mention before we move on. You've probably seen this already, Snow Leopard visual tweaks. You know, they've been saying Snow Leopard is just going to be... sort of, you know, a bit of speed boost here and there, but nothing drastic, and just a couple of things have been picked up in the latest build. The sliders are going to look slightly different. They actually look a little bit nicer, but, you know, nothing to get excited about.
They always talked about that the Snow Leopard was going to have a different look and feel. They talked about this granite look and feel. It's all going to be dark.
Yeah, and then they all went quiet, didn't they? They never mentioned anymore. I mean, now that you mention the granite look, the other thing that I picked up was, you know, the contextual menus, when you right-click, they are, like, sort of black, sort of a darker colour. It actually looks quite nice. It's like white text and black background. It looks
I don't like... We were talking about it at work today. I don't like white text on... I don't like white on dark. I find it... I don't know why it does something to my eyes.
Racist.
It's not racist.
No. No, but I mean, I saw a screenshot of it and I looked... maybe just because it looked different to what we are used to now, I thought it looked quite nice.
Different. It's new. It's exciting.
Yeah. I think, you know, it'd be nice to get like a new maybe theme for the Mac, just for people to try it out. But hey, it doesn't matter. So now, I guess, our main subject...
Yeah, so over the next few weeks, we're going to be looking at different digital media playback options.
Yep. Some of the software we'll be covering, I guess, are like Plex.
Yep.
Which is, I think it's designed by the Xbox Media Center guys.
I think it was, well, it's a fork from it, so I think it's a different team, but they've taken that as its base.
Some other we'll be covering over the coming weeks, Boxy.
Yeah. Yep. PS3, Xbox 360.
Basically, any way that you can connect your home cinema center to your digital media, I guess. So that'll be like covering streaming your movies, photographs, music, anything.
And also, we'll have a look at Windows 7 as well for doing the same.
And it won't just be software, will it? We'll be covering hardware as well. So stuff like Apple TV, maybe, or any other options that are out there.
Yep.
So, but today, this week, we've been trying out Plex.
Yes.
We've installed it on our... Well, I've installed it on my MacBook. I don't know where...
Same here.
You've installed on that.
Yeah.
And we're just going to cover, basically, how easy it was to install, set up, connecting to your movies, your computer, and then how easy it was to actually get the movies to play on it.
Yeah.
So you've been using it a bit more than me, I think. I've only used it for a couple of days so far.
Okay. So so Plex is, as we've said, it's for Mac only. You install the software, and once you've installed it, you basically need to set it up and point it to where your media is stored. Media can be stored on the local machine. It can be stored on a USB drive, or it can be stored on a NAS. So basically anywhere that your media is stored, you can point it. Mm-hmm. And I guess that was my first frustration with it. It's not the most intuitive to set up. I don't know how you found it, but it was just one of these things that when I started it up, I was like, where do I add my media? How do I do it? It wasn't obvious at all.
I mean, the installation, there's nothing to it anyway. But yeah, you're right. Once you've installed and you turn it on, you know, instantly you're quite surprised at how nice it looks. You know, really nice interface. You can control it all via your Apple remote control.
That's right.
Which can be a bit clumsy when you're sort of entering text.
Oh, I don't know. I really got used to it. I just thought
maybe
it was excellent.
Just me then. No, yeah, I mean, navigation is fine. It's just like entering text. I thought, you know, the remote isn't the best option. But yeah, I mean, it's not really straightforward, is it, trying to find your media on the network?
No, I mean the application itself, I probably should have given out the web address. It's at plexapp.com, so that's plexapp.com. And there's a really good wiki there and a set of documents, and the forums are well populated, but it's just not very obvious.
I mean,
so one of the things,
when you see the software, you just think that it's going to be easy to use, just like any other Mac software, but it's not, is it?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know if we'll have some screenshots up about Plex. I don't even know if we'll do a screencast with this one or not. Yeah, I don't know. But the one of the things that I'd found was really useful was, I don't know if, and I'd sent you the link as well, the screencast online. So the guy behind that is Don McAllister, and he had done a really nice half hour on how to set up and use Plex.
Yeah.
And it was dead easy to follow. And it meant straight away that I could easily add in, you know, my TV, my movies. It just got me going.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, it's not very intuitive, because to add your movies, you go into, was it like Play My Videos or what's...
Play Your Videos, play. Yeah.
So basically, you've got options on the left-hand side. So you've got Play Your Videos, then you've got Play Music, and then you've got Play Movies, and you think... What's the difference between videos and movies then?
Because you get videos, TV.
That's
and
right,
movies.
Sorry, yeah, that's what it is.
And that was a bit that was like, what's going on here? And you're going to play your movies, and there was nothing there. And I was like, oh, and it was just one of these things. It's now that you've done it,
yeah,
it's fine, you know, and it's all it is go to play your videos and you set it up in there. And
I mean, having some issues actually, because in that screencast, you know, the guy says, for example, my movies are on an external drive connected to the Mac upstairs. So from a MacBook to point to that external drive in the movies folder, he says, well, actually, initially, there's a bit of jigging around with your file structure, isn't it? Because he advises you to make sure your movies are in like a movies folder and your TV shows are in a TV folder.
I guess there's a couple of things. I mean, I added my TV shows, and most of them, about half of them didn't get picked up. And when I looked at the wiki, it's all about file naming.
Mm-hmm.
So it's looking for something like S01, E01, so season 01, episode 01.
Right.
And if it's not in that format, it just doesn't see the files, even though the files are there.
I don't know if you've come across this, but you know, like my movies, I've got them in the movies folder, so I don't have any subfolders. Unless,
I'm the same with
unless
movies.
Unless it's a DVD rip, which then has a video TS and a, you know, audio TS folder within a subfolder of the movie's name. But my TV shows, I'm assuming you have to make a subfolder for each TV show and then have your episodes within that folder. Is that right?
But I had done that already, so I didn't feel that was too
bad.
Right,
I had to redo that. Because, like, for example, Prison Break. I had Prison Break, then I had Season 1 in a subfolder and Season 2 in a subfolder. But I was finding it hard to pick those shows up. What I had to do was move them all out from Season 1 and Season 2 folders and stick them in the Prison Break folder itself.
Well, it's interesting because mine's are all organised in seasons and it's working
fine.
But then,
like, subfolders, like Season 1?
Yeah.
Ah.
So I've got like, Blackadder, and then I've got Blackadder Season 1, and all the episodes are in that folder. So I've got the Blackadder at the top level, and then I've got Seasons 1 to 4 as four subfolders, and then each six episodes in each of those subfolders, and that's the same for The Wire and the same for West Wing.
I wonder if it's maybe my file naming conventions, maybe.
It might be your file names, because that was what was tripping me up. And it was about half an hour of trial and error, because I kept on thinking it was folders, first of all, and I tried moving them around. So I think that was part of the issues with getting it set up. It wasn't just knowing which menu to go to.
No.
It also relies on a file name, you know, which is a bit clumsy.
I'll tell you another thing I had issues with. You know the Battlestar Galactica Caprica episode? I added that to my movies folder because I thought, will that be like considered as a movie? And I wouldn't pick it up. So then I moved it to my TV folder and added it as a TV show. It still wouldn't pick. It would pick it up, but when I tried playing it, would play nothing. And the only way I can get it to play is actually going into Play My Videos and then playing it from there. I can't get it playing from movies or TV at all.
Strange. I mean, I had a couple of issues, and I guess when we'll be jumping around and we're focusing on the issues, but I'll get this one out of the way. I had Ghostbusters as a high-def rip, but it didn't see it as the film, and it didn't see it as a comic or anything like that. It saw it as one of the DVD extras.
I see.
So it had it down as like a two-minute thing, and it wasn't displaying properly, but you can go in and manually, you know, pick it and then do a search and then assign it the right thing. So it's not totally automatic that you can't get around that.
Yeah, I had that with a couple of my movies as well. I had to manually update them.
Yeah, I had two movies out of about maybe 30 that I had to do that on. And the TV series, once I got my names right, they're all fine.
I mean, what I'll probably do is I'll go over my TV shows again and try to rename them. But I mean, despite the issues, once it's set up, it is quite spectacular looking, isn't it? The interface is just amazing.
I think that's the interface is gorgeous. Mm. You know, so going into, I guess we'll do movies first, going into movies, and you can pick cover flow options, and, well, I guess each against each movie, you get so much information, you get ratings.
Yeah.
On the screen, and again, that's why I might do a quick screencast
it's just
on this.
Screen,
on,
isn't it? It's like
corner
to corner. What I really like about it is like obviously it's pulling in all the media information from somewhere on the internet.
Well, there's for each, you can choose which source.
Yeah.
So it was like for the movies, it was IMDb. And then there was a couple of different TV sites you could use
that's
as well.
Right, yeah. But what I like about it is like the default, for example, if you've got a DVD and it gives you like a default cover for that DVD. But if you don't like that, you can then go and choose some.
Yep.
Like, there's even like fan art for the background, which absolutely looks absolutely amazing.
Really, and I guess this is a thing that I really liked using Plex over something like the 360, the PS3. It's the way it presents. So you feel like you go into your TV series, for example. So I'm picking The Wire.
Yeah.
You've got fantastic background comes up for The Wire.
In fact,
but it plays
for
a theme
TV
tune.
Shows, yeah, it plays a theme tune as well, doesn't
plays
it?
Plays a theme tune as well. And it's just, it's a really small touch, but it's just, I'm only going to have series that I'm interested in watching and keeping.
Yeah.
And to have that level of quality, you know, while I'm doing the, while I'm browsing through it all, was just, it was just lovely.
Mm.
So yeah, I mean there's a, and it, as you're viewing it, there's a whole lot of different options. So you can tune it to cover flow, you can, you know, do a whole lot of, I think there's about sort of five or six different
there
ways of viewing your media.
And then there's sorting order as well, you can sort by different ways.
But yeah, I don't know about you, the even just playing back I thought was really nice. I mean, it didn't take long to buffer, even though it was coming from a NAS.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you spent any time in the settings for Plex, but there are some really nice features for like, you know, like upscaling some of your DVDs, and they use like bilinear filtering and, you know, like converting audio to like Dolby Digital, etc.
Yeah, I mean, those, I mean, if I remember from my old Xbox Media Center days, I mean, they had really some really nice options in there.
Yeah.
That started getting quite detailed, and I guess that was the thing. A lot of people looked at the front end and thought, well, it's okay, but it was really the power was in the options available.
Yeah. I think, you know, like, if they produce, like, a really nice user guide, keep it really, really simple, it'd be a huge hit. You know, I wouldn't mind paying something for this sort of quality.
Well, it's not even a user guide. See if they just had a menu option that said add media.
Yeah.
You know, so the first time you went in, what do I want to do? I want to add some media. And it actually helped you take, you know, if they tried to make it a bit more, it took you through those steps.
Yeah.
Rather than going, well, I want to play videos, but oh, I've not got any. What do I do now?
Mm.
And it still felt a bit clunky. It still felt a bit...
like you said, you go into your videos, for example, the first time and it says add videos. But there's also like a browse option. And then you think, if I want to add, why do I want to browse for?
Exactly.
And then you browse to actually get to like a network drive or like some other network device. And you think, it should be just one option, add videos. And then it takes you to where you get your videos from. And that's it.
And that's the same way. I mean, it was only when I watched that screencast that I picked up the tip about, you know, having a folder for movies, having a folder for TV.
Yep.
You know, so, but I mean, certainly that when you're playing back, really nice, it also remembers your position. So if you've watched a movie and you stop and you come back a week later and you say you can either play from start or play from position, and that's not just on DVDs, that's on any content, which I thought was really nice.
How did you think it compared to like Front Row that's already built in?
I preferred it.
I think I like, you know, Front Row for its simplicity. It's like really, really simple. But I mean, Front Plex, if you imagine have some visitors come around and if you connect this to your like plasma screen or your LCD screen, fire it up. It's just got that sort of wow factor to it, isn't it? It's
and like, also, out the box, there's no codec worries either.
No.
So out the box, it just played everything. You know, and that's the big difference for me over a lot of the other media players, even Front Row. Mm. You know, there's certain things that won't play unless you start messing around with codecs.
I mean, what, I really loved about it is just you've got your movie files. You don't have to worry about getting, like, album art, cover art.
No.
Putting in all the, like, you know, details about the, you know, the movie.
Exactly.
It pulls it all from IMDb, and it's, like, brilliant. You know, instantly you've got your actors' names. You've got, like, a brief summary of the movie. You've got all the artwork is there and a really, really high quality sort of presentation.
And I think, I think for me, it's what you've just said. If I want to set up some sort of media centre, I don't want to just browse to a folder. Exactly. And see a list of like 50 file names.
It's just nasty.
And I'm looking through for Heroes Season 3, Episode 1.
Yep.
Where is it? This was like dead easy to use. Could use the Apple remote, which has got what, like 5-6 buttons on it. Could navigate wherever I wanted to, and it played my media.
I mean, one thing I love to try with this is getting a HDMI dongle for my MacBook, connecting it to my plasma screen, and then connecting my amp to the sound output. I mean, can you just imagine that? That'd be just absolutely gorgeous.
You mentioned sound. How did you find added music?
Oh, I haven't managed to do that successfully. I'll tell you my experience, and then maybe you can tell me yours, see if you...
Well, I think I'm going to be the same as you, but crack on.
Right, my iTunes is all set up on my main Mac upstairs, on the iMac, so my actual library is on the external drive, and then the iMac is basically, I've set up iTunes that looks at the external drive instead of the hard drive, internal hard drive. Now, on the MacBook, my iTunes on the MacBook picks up my iTunes folder from my Mac, so of course I've set it up as a shared folder, it picks up everything. So when I came to Plex, I thought, because obviously, you know, we use that screencast to add our TV shows and movies, but the screencast didn't cover music.
No.
For, you know, whatever reason. So I thought, right, it should be a dawdle, go into music and say add source. But no, it's not. It's not straightforward at all. I tried, I went into iTunes and I thought maybe because my MacBook iTunes can pick up my shared folder, that this will happen automatically. It doesn't. It just picks up my MacBook's iTunes folder, which is empty. So I thought, okay. I thought, well, I'll then try maybe browsing to my iTunes XML file. You know, the iTunes library XML. So I browsed to that over my network into my external drive, clicked on it. Nothing happened. Then I went into, I can't remember where exactly it is. I think somewhere in settings, it says something like import iTunes library. Again, I did that, went into my, found my XML file. I thought adding my XML file will be the same as importing my library. Did it. Again, nothing. So the only way I can get music playing at the moment is if I manually browse the external drive. And like what you said earlier, I've got like a file folder structure. And I browse to each individual song and just play it. And then that's it. Then move on to the next one. That's how I've got mine working at the moment.
All I've tried to do, and I think it's just crashing on me. But you put Plex. I mean, I'm kind of similar to you. I've got my music all on my iMac. Got Plex set up on my MacBook Pro. What it looks like is I set up Plex Media Server on the iMac and let it cache the music, and then you connect to that media server from Plex on the MacBook.
It's one of the tips I found online, but I've not tried it yet.
Yeah, it's twice now it's crashed on me.
But when it doesn't crash, does it work?
No. I don't know, I was setting it up really late last night because I wanted to at least have it done for, you know, trialing or talking about just now. But it's fail at the moment. But I think it's me. I don't think it's the app.
I'll give that a try tonight if I get the chance. But, I mean, I read about that online and they said it's really good to do it because... Then on the iMac, even if you shut down Plex, because you've enabled that option, it should your MacBook Pro should still pick it up. So something I'm gonna try later on. Hopefully it will work. Because I mean, if it was just really, really, you know, easy to set up, that'll be a winner for me. I love it when it works. It's just a setup is a pain in the bum.
Did you try any applications?
Yes. I added BBC iPlayer and a couple of the other things. Did I try one? I think I might have tried one of the apps, and yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, I mean, what I really liked was you've got like iPlayer. There was the Apple Movies, you know, for movie trailers.
YouTube as well.
There was YouTube, and there was quite a few of the kind of podcasters were in there as well. Just really nice. Again, just having a menu system that you can easily navigate and play. Ted was in there as well.
That's right, yeah.
And I can see that again grown over time, you know, with more... I mean, Hulu was there, but obviously there's all these issues with Hulu and you can't get it here, and they're talking about by the end of the year it'll be out in the UK, which would be great.
Well, I'll tell you I'm definitely going to do. I'm definitely going to buy an HDMI dongle for it, for the MacBook, and then try it and see... how it looks on, you know, on a bigger screen, whether there's any issues with like picture maybe not looking quite right or what. But but I mean,
have you not got DVI into your screen? Are you HDMI only?
No, actually, I do have a DVI port in my plasma. Why?
Because you get the, when you bought your Mac, did you not get the dongle that has DVI out?
No, there was nothing.
Oh, I've got one.
They must be getting a bit stingy with the new MacBooks.
I don't know where, I don't know why I was going to show you, but it's in my cupboard.
No, I mean, I'll open up my box, see if it's in there. But yeah. I'm pretty sure when I got it, I checked.
I'm pretty,
nothing.
I'm pretty sure I didn't. Maybe I bought it.
You probably did buy it.
Yeah, maybe I bought it. I've had it plumbed in this week.
Yeah,
and it's been lovely.
Oh, it's been, I'm getting a bit jealous now.
So I guess. And I guess we're still to review Boxy and take a look at some of the other options. But I've kind of got my mind made up now that it's a Mac Mini that I'm going to purchase at some point.
Well, I mean, you can imagine this running on a Mac Mini, and then you don't have to worry about any other sort of connection issues.
No. So it's on a Mac Mini. I'd have my iTunes library sitting on that as well. I'd have Plex sitting on it, and that would be connected into my telly. And I'd have some sort of NAS, and whether I end up... replace the NAS I've got with something a bit more substantial, I don't know. But ultimately, I can see myself...
So you'd have your music library on the Mac Mini itself and not on your iMac, and you just want to share it or something like that, and then...
And the reason I'm saying that is I think, ultimately, if I got the Mac Mini, I would get rid of the iMac.
Oh, right, okay.
So you know what I'm doing? Yeah, so get rid of the MacBook, get rid of the iMac, buy a Mac Mini, buy a new MacBook... And that would be me.
Rich man.
Poor man. Poor man. The only little caveat, a couple of crashes I've had with it.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know if that was just the media because I was streaming from the NAS or not.
I mean, it crashed on me a couple of times while I was trying to set up the music bit. So I just quit it and then started again.
Overall, I'm so impressed with it. So impressed.
Yeah, I mean, for something that's free, it's spectacular, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And you know, like once, you've got setup issues, but once it's set up, you know, I don't think anyone can deny how nice it looks and how professional it looks. Did you turn off your RSS feed on it? It's one of the first things that guy covered in this.
I did. Yeah, because it just annoyed me.
Yeah.
Oh no, I didn't. No, I didn't. I was trying to remember where it was. No, I didn't, because it was telling me about the whole new plugins and stuff like that at the bottom of the screen. No, I left it on.
Yeah.
So next week, I think we'll maybe take a look at the consoles.
Yeah.
And we can just look at the playback and media noise and how they shape up.
Yep, definitely. I guess that wraps up Plex for us. We'll obviously put something up on the blog to share our experience and maybe... pointing in the direction of any screencasts or wiki entries that you know that might help you if you want to try it out yourself. I certainly recommend it to everybody.
Definitely worth trying. Yep. I mean, for the sake of a download, even just to download it and add in like a couple of videos and just see it in action is superb.
Okay, so I guess that's all the main topics discussed. How about
just as well?
we're running over time again. So have you got anything you'd like to maybe recommend for our listeners today?
It's a website, and I don't know why, but there's always been something about the Apollo missions that have just captured the imagination for me. And there was I don't know if you ever saw the TV show From the Earth to the Moon.
Yep.
I bought the box set of it. I just loved it. But there's a website that's running in... It's basically running the same timeline as the Apollo 11 launch, and it's called WeChooseTheMoon.org. Really nice website, flash-based, lots of content, but it's actually running at the same time as the rocket launch. So over the next, I guess, week and a half, it will be constantly updating and changing to mirror the same time as 40 years ago.
Great.
And it's lovely.
I'll certainly have a look at it.
Yeah, well worth a visit. What about yourself? Anything you'd like to... share.
Well, this was more of a rush job because I left it a bit late. So,
bless. You have been busy.
I have been very busy. And all shall be revealed, all in good time. My pick for this week will be it's a little bit of software called MKV2VOB, and actually ties in quite nicely with all this media plane features that we've been discussing about. Basically what it is it's a bit of software that can convert your MKVs, MKV video files to PS3 friendly format. So, for example, if you've downloaded a movie from somewhere, anywhere, I won't say where, and it's an MKV format, and if you want to play that on your PS3, all you do is you use a set MKV to WOB to convert that into a... It can either actually convert it to a WOB file, which is almost like a DVD format, but it can also convert them into an MPEG, which is what I normally do. And then it keeps all your surround sound and all your HD video quality in there. Most of the time, I'd guess about 95% of the time, it doesn't do any encoding. All it does is what's called, technical term for it is remuxing. And what it does is, I think it just changes like the video wrapper around the file. And that literally takes 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes, depending on the size of the file. But every now and again, I have found that it has to like transcode the video file, and that can take like hours. But I mean, like I said, most of the time it doesn't take that long, and the end result is a nice PS3 friendly format video file, which you can then either play directly on the PS3, or you can do what I do and stream it, and it works brilliantly. It's free. You can get it from mkv2vob.com website, and if you've got a PS3, I think you should maybe give it a try. Very easy to use. Nothing to set
Fantastic.
Up.
Fantastic. That sounds really good. Thanks for that, Dr. Shack. I must go and look at what video wrappers and all that are.
You don't need to know what video wrappers are. But
you big geek.
So anyway, I think we should wrap up there. It's gone past my bedtime.
It's been a long old show.
It has. So, so you can find us at our website, www.digitaloutbox.com. You can email us with any feedback that you might have at info@digitaloutbox.com. And you can find us on Twitter, Digital Outbox.
We need to get that recorded. We need to get somebody to sing us a little ditty. Maybe we should record you.
Yeah, maybe we could hire a celebrity, you know, pay them a bit of cash and say, right, you know... Okay, maybe like, not.
We could get Stephen Fry.
Yeah, we could do. He's your best mate, so you can maybe have a chat with him. So anyway, you can follow us on Twitter, and you can also find us on Facebook at Digital Outbox. So where can we find you, Ian?
Iand.net.
What's that then? So Ian, what's Iand.net?
It's my blog.
Okay.
My deserted blog. And you'll find me on Twitter under Shweepa.
Facebook?
Ian Dick.
Okay. You're not very keen on Facebook, are you? I have to ask you every time myself.
I don't see the point. Okay. Well, I use Twitter, and I can't... I used to be one of these sucky guys that has Twitter and Facebook linked up, so every time I tweeted, it would put it on Facebook, and it's like, what is the point?
Okay.
So anyway, that's my little rant over. I've been all right tonight. I've not ranted. I thought I was going to rant all night.
No, you just made up for it right now. So.
No, honestly not. I've not.
Okay. Not.
Anyway, what about you? Where can we find you on the big, bad internet?
You can find me at Shaquille9.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at ShaqN. And I'm also on Facebook, Shaquille9.
And what about on Flickr?
Oh, Flickr, yeah.
You don't seem to mention Flickr.
No.
I mean, you don't seem to like it.
I forget. My username on Flickr is Shaka_, so you can find me on there.
If only you had some sort of nice little website that brought your photos and portfolio together.
Ah, very good. That's coming all in good time, like I said.
Mm.
So anyway, thank you for listening, and hopefully you'll join us again next week. Ta-ra for now.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.